Blog Talk Radio.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year, everybody. You're listening to I'm Just Saying. Yes, it's the new year, 2012. We're getting a new name. So sit tight. We'll be back in just a second. Happy 2012. Happy 2012, everyone. Can you believe it? Unless you're a year old, 2012 just sounds so unbelievable. It just sounds so unbelievable. 2012? Jeez. Wow. Well, I'm excited about it, happy about it. This is really good stuff. So it's a wonderful day. It's Sunday, 2012, January 1st. I am just ecstatic about what this whole new year holds, this whole new spiritual environment that we're in, spiritually, economically, physically, emotionally. There's a lot going on in the world right now, just so much to contend with and so much to enjoy and so much to look forward to. So, Happy New Year. It's 2012. We've got a fun show tonight. Ronnie and I will be here with you talking about 2011, the recap, and what's coming up and happening and exciting in 2012. So we're going to take a real quick break. Sit tight. And we'll be back in just a moment.
Welcome to SBNet News, 90-second news break. The number of Americans filing new claims for jobless benefits dropped to a 3.5-year low, suggesting a weak U.S. economy is gradually improving. The jobless rate dropped to a 2.5-year low of 8.6% in November, suggesting the labor market recovery was gaining speed. The number of young Americans aged 19 to 25 lacking health insurance has shrunk by 2.5 million since President Barack Obama's health care overhaul took effect. The drop is 2.5 times as large as the decline indicated by previous government and private estimates from earlier this year. The legendary poet and artist Gil Scott Herring will be honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award at the 2012 Grammys. In 1968, at age 19, he wrote his most famous work, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. By 23, he published 2 novels, a book of poems, and recorded 3 albums. 90-year-old burger chain White Castle, known for its square slider burgers, is offering a glass of wine and beer in its restaurant in Indiana. Earlier this year, Burger King opened a Whopper Bar South Beach in Miami that also offers beer. There you have it. I'm Jerome Esprit for Esprinet News.
Welcome back. We're back on the air. Sunday, January 1st, 2012. Hey! Happy New Year, everybody. Happy New Year. Ronnie, I'm so glad that you joined us tonight on the radio so we can talk and chat about 2011 and what's coming up for 2012. Happy New Year, sis.
Happy New Year. It's a good New Year. It was really, really lovely. Can you hear me?
Yeah. I can hear you, but it sounds like you're a little bit in a tunnel, underwater, swimming or something. Where you at?
Okay. Is that better?
That's much better. That's much better.
I'm not under the tunnel. I didn't go in the tunnel last night, so.
You didn't?
I really
did. Okay, cool.
No. But I really, this was one of the best New Year's I've had in a long time. It was really good.
Oh, that's
so
good. But
well,
before we talk about it, you know, 2012, that's what I said at the beginning, is unless you're a year old, 2012 sounds like so Jetson. Like,
it does.
Like
it really sounds. It does. It's phenomenal. We were recapping when we were excited about 2000. And it seemed like
right?
a couple
oh,
of weeks ago.
Go down.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So 12?
Yeah.
It's like, are you kidding me? Are we there?
2012, yep. 2012. Thank God we're here. And
yeah.
then, you know, eight years, it'll be to 2020.
I have to get ready.
Okay.
Listen.
2020. 2020. So 2012, man, it's a good number, though. It feels good.
Yes, it feels good. It feels good. Everybody seems to be excited about it.
Yeah.
Things are coming. Things are looking up.
Yeah.
Things are looking up. So
and
what
you
did
know,
you have
you
on?
What, go ahead.
I was going to say, what are your takeaways from the year?
Oh, from 2011. Wow, the takeaways from 2011. Well, you know, I'll tell you? Everything, it seems like things have just blended together over the last several years. I feel like I'm coming up out of a fog. So much stuff that has happened. And interestingly enough, I remember a lot of the not-so-great things, like Michael Jackson. And, you know, it seems like we lost Michael in 2011, but we didn't, right? It was the trial that happened in 2011.
It was a trial that was so intense that brought him back to life in
yes.
my heart.
And doesn't
my heart,
it feel
and
like
my
we
opinion.
Just lost him?
Yeah. And I'm glad it's over because this way maybe his family can get some peace and we can all finally accept it because it's hard to accept.
It is.
You know, we were talking about him today, and we were thinking, and next year I'm going to make sure I have enough in savings, and the next year I'm going to have this, and I wish I had done this, and I wish I had done that, and this could have been better, and that could have been better. And then we decided, but we're above dirt.
You know what? That's what Pastor Flake said last night. He said that last night. And he said, you know what he said that was so, it really hit me. He said, listen, we had 5 funerals this week at the church. So if you're in the house, you really need to be shouting. You really need to be shouting. He said five. You know? And people were sitting there, they were chilling, and you know, I guess like Pastor Dollar was saying, folks were falling asleep and, you know, everything else. And he's like, look, y'all need to be shouting because 5 funerals.
Exactly.
I did 5 funerals. 7 days, 5 funerals. Since
that's
Christmas.
A lot. That's not good. That's
you
ridiculous.
Know, since Christmas. And then
and
we think
have,
about I don't want to talk about all the negative stuff, but really, you know, the things that I thought about was Heavy D. And,
Heavy D
you know,
and these young men.
Young. He was 40, what, 2? 42?
42. I think 42 or 44. Very young. Too young. Absolutely.
Too young.
Too young.
With an 8-year-old daughter.
Michael Jackson, too young.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hello,
even,
Michael.
Yeah. Just 50.
With all those little
young.
Little babies. Yeah. Little children.
Gil Scott-Heron, too young. Was he 60?
Oh my gosh, the revolution will not be televised. I couldn't look. I couldn't even talk about that.
No, that was too much. I just shocked. First of all, I didn't know he was ill. I didn't know that he still had issues. So, you know, nobody had talked about him in many, many years. So,
I didn't know that because I was trying to get him to be on the show. So I knew he had had some issues. I knew he had been in and out of the hospital. I knew he had still had some of the, you know, some of the other
the
issues that
from
he had
back,
had before. Yeah. So I was aware of that, but I was not expecting him to leave us. But I mean, you know, I wasn't. I have a friend whose grandmother is, what is she, in her 90s? 97, I think. And she was saying she was very concerned because the grandma is not doing well, you know. And she was still really upset about it. And I said, and of course you would be upset about it. No matter how old the person is or how young the person is, it doesn't matter. Your impact, your emotions and everything get you anyway.
And we already decided that the most unpleasant and rude, politically incorrect.
I know where you're going. Go ahead. Go ahead. Say it.
The
Please.
Most politically incorrect, rude, no Emily Post having etiquette losing thing to do is when somebody says they had a family member pass away. Oh, really? How old are they?
How old is she? How old
Oh, well,
they?
95. Oh, well, this, you know, they had
a
wonderful long life.
You like, did
who
I ask
are you?
You?
I know. Who are you to say they had a wonderful long life?
How do you do?
They might have still had things to do.
I know, exactly. Especially if they weren't ready to check out, it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
I don't know. And my least favorite line about anyone that has passed on is they're in a better place.
Oh. How many times do we hear that? I never knew what the horrible things people could say when somebody died until mommy passed away.
And I know. And when they say you're in a better place, well, how do you know? I don't see you rushing to get there. I don't see anybody rushing to get there. If that was the case, the hospitals would be empty.
That's right. Because nobody would go. They're like, oh, heck, let me go to a better place. Don't take me to the hospital. Take me to that better place.
Listen,
oh,
really,
man.
Honest to God. Oh, my goodness. Drives
that's
me
hilarious.
Nuts.
But that is really true. Because I remember that. I remember back when mommy passed away. I said, you know, I still have to do it. I still have to. I'm going to write a whole thing about funerals because that was something. And nobody gets it. Nobody gets it.
Right. So now after that, I never asked anyone regarding their family members or whatever, how old they were or whatever has
right.
happened to
oh,
them.
The,
you know.
Here's the other one. Well, was he sick?
No.
Well, does that make it better?
Does that make it better?
If he was sick, it's something. But I know people are just trying to find a way to get out of that conversation.
To deal with
nobody
it.
Knows what
yeah.
to say.
Nobody
you know,
knows,
nobody
what,
knows what to say. But anyway, okay. So what else happened in 2011? What else happened in 2011 that was...
Well, that one of the most... What stuck in my... I had so many different moments that were profound. But that tsunami / earthquake, I still am... just overwhelmed when I see the photos of that water coming over the wall. I just, my heart just breaks for those people. I don't even know what that was in Japan. How does that happen?
Oh, yeah.
Why does that happen? That was beyond, you know, comprehension for me. It was really, really something. And what amazes me more than that is the fact that the Japanese people have gone quiet. You don't know what they're doing. You don't hear it. They didn't ask for a dime. Help us. Nothing. Red Cross. We're tired. We're getting better. We're rebuilt. Nothing. Just silence. It's amazing.
That's true. That's really true.
Isn't that true?
That's right. I really haven't heard a whole lot. I wonder if it's just the news that I watch, you know, or if it's
nothing. There's just nothing. They just went silent.
Yeah.
I watch a lot of news.
I know you
a
do.
Lot of
you watch more
and
news
I
than
know.
Anybody.
Than anybody. I should actually be a part of a news team. I should
be
part of a reporting. Oh, well, yeah, that's true. I am. Isn't that great? Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for
you
reminding
are.
Me. That's a good way to thank you. That made my day. But really,
yeah.
I watch a lot of news, and I heard nothing. I haven't heard a thing about it. So that, you know, maybe I'll try to do some research and reach out and see if anybody, because initially the celebrities were, you know, donating money. You had the Black Eyed Peas. They were in Japan at the time, so they did a tribute, and they donated money. And Lady Gaga, different celebrities, but now I hear nothing. I just don't hear nothing.
Yeah.
And not only that, but from the Japanese people themselves, nothing.
That's interesting. I wonder how much money we sent them as a country.
Yeah. So I'm going to check that out.
Don't
hear much about that. And then
now,
my other.
Black Eyed Peas. Oh, sorry. Well, that's
go
Black
ahead.
Eyed Peas. Let's come back to the Black Eyed Peas in a minute. No, you can finish. I won't forget.
Oh, I was going to say that tornado that happened in Joplin, Queens, because that was another, we had a hurricane slash tornado that was incredible. And
that's right.
Thank God we were all safe, but it was a mess.
It was a mess. It really was
And the
a
other
mess.
Night we had a storm.
Really wild weather.
The other night we had a storm. And we were power outaged for 5 hours.
You were? I didn't know that.
I know. Things happen so fast, and I kind of slipped my mind. Because, you know, we got ready for the New Year celebration and so forth. But I remember right now. Yeah, 5 hours. And I said, here we were on the night of the, it was bedtime, so.
Did you go to the Cheesecake Factory or something so that you didn't have to sit
no,
in the dark?
No. It was mid, like, say 10, so it was late. And since the tornado slash hurricane or hurricane slash tornado, I was prepared. I had plenty of flashlights, plenty of, you know. Listen, I don't know if anybody's ever seen these, but Costco has these candles that have a vanilla scent. And you just put double-A batteries in them, and they last for a lifetime because they have a timer, and they go on and off every 5 hours.
What?
$19.99 for four.
Stop it.
I'm serious. So if anybody's listening.
Over there.
Exactly. If anybody's listening and they want to stack up, because – now, honestly, this is funny, but it's not. Remember when we lived in Los Angeles and there was mandatory, you had to have a safety kit. You had to have a disaster kit.
Emergency
had to have
kit,
one
yeah.
in your car, emergency disaster
yep.
kit. You had to have one in your car, one at your job, where and you would get written up if you didn't have one, if it didn't have all of the tools, components, every single thing that had to be in there. They checked. It had to be under your desk or wherever your locker or wherever they designated them to be. And so I'm so used to that, you know. So when I got here, I started looking for things because nobody here had anything. Nobody had a battery. Nobody had a flashlight. You know, shovels. Okay, everybody has a shovel. I don't mean you, but I mean, like, the people that I'm around, they don't have shovels.
I'm sitting over here with my mouth hanging open because I remember how intense we were about that in California and how intense I am not about that now. So
exactly.
You're right. Yeah, it's a world of difference, a complete culture
world
shock
of
here.
It's a culture shock here. And if something comes up where the power is out, the neighbors were outside and they were trying to figure out, and I just turned on my two. They come in a four-pack. People, you have to run over there and get these. They are vanilla-scented, and they're nice. They're the big chunky-type candles, you know.
Uh-huh.
The huge, not the fat ones that you would see if you had, like, you know how you have your beautiful candle stand? It's that size, the big ones. And so you put the two batteries in there, and then they flicker inside. So the light flickers, and it stays on for 5 hours at a time.
What department is that in? Near the flashlights and stuff?
Yeah, kind of near the flashlights. So when they were having when we were having our hurricane/tornado, I got out and I said, I'm not sitting in here with nothing. And, you know, everybody was like, oh, this is New York. They make a big deal. The lights never go off. Who cares? Don't be bothered.
And they were off for like a week.
Right. So I go out and I said, I'm going to go and buy some provisions because those of us of our type of friends and folks could care less. I go out, and this is off the, I hope we're not on the air. And I go out. And there wasn't a battery to be found.
Right.
There wasn't a battery to be found. That was all that was left was those candles. So I said, well, I'll take those, you know. What the heck? And only batteries, no D batteries for flashlights, you know what I mean? Batteries that you can put in your radio and all that. The people had wiped the whole town out. I went every store. I even went into the beauty supply.
For batteries. Oh, wow. They didn't have any?
No. They did not have any. And they said,
wait,
you're not going to
breathe. You told me the secret about finding batteries. You told me where to find batteries.
I sure did.
I
found the batteries at the 99 cent store.
That's my
favorite place. So anyway, after all that, because the other night, since I've been so prepared, I didn't have, you know, I wasn't worried. I had batteries, I had flashlights,
five
I had everything.
5-hour candles.
Good. 5-hour candles, and, you know, everything. So I was prepared, and I just turned them all on, and I have a... I have a what do you call it, DVD player that plays by batteries.
Oh,
listen,
okay.
California will teach you how to survive.
That's true. That is true. I'm telling you. So
I have water.
I still have a boom box.
That's right.
I have a boom box that takes batteries. I don't have a DVD player that plays on batteries, but I got
to
do that. So
you
a
have
DVD
to get
player,
there.
Boom box. I need some more flashlights. And I will get those candles.
At the 99 cent store, they have plenty of flashlights, and they turn on. They're fine. I mean, you know, you can get mag lights and all that, you know. I don't have a lantern, so that's going to be the next thing I get. I'm going to get a lantern. I wasn't able to bring mine with me, but, yeah. I'm not, cause
and a generator.
Exactly. Well, I couldn't bring my generator, but I'm going to get one.
I just
laugh,
but you know, you say your name is Veronica, but I think it's Paul Bunyan.
I couldn't be my parents. But the thing is, we think we live here in this metropolitan, you know, protected area, and now things happen everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we found
You're not immune anymore. Right?
We found that out. And California really will learn you because with the earthquakes and the riots and everything else.
Anything and everything and all of that, right? Everything. There's always something.
There's always something going on. So you have to be. And they insist upon it. Every other, I don't remember any time that they didn't talk about the emergency kits. And then I worked in the hospital, too, so you know it was ridiculous. We had emergency drills and all that everywhere all the time.
At work, it was always an emergency drill. It's always something. And it was mandatory. Like I said, if you didn't have your emergency kit, you were getting written up.
Right.
So.
Right.
And it had to, to be in the car.
That
is so interesting.
They're not thinking about that. But, yeah, I'm going to, right, we had to have water in the car. You had to have 3 days' worth of food in your car, canned foods and can openers and
can openers and dry, those dry packs, the ration
packs,
those dry packs, granola bars. Blanket.
And those things that you put down so that people can find you, what are those called again?
Oh, flares.
Flares. You had to have flares. You had to have everything in your car.
Everything.
Blankets, all that other stuff. And you would think, and that's California.
Shovel. Don't forget the shovel. Because you have to be able to dig yourself out.
Right. It doesn't snow. It doesn't snow, and it doesn't really get that cold. But out there, we always had a blanket, and we always had a shovel.
And always had water in the car.
And always had shovel,
always had, the provisions. So, and gloves,
right.
You had to have gloves. It was something.
Right.
They had a big list you had to have.
For
2012, everybody, get your emergency kit.
Yep, get your emergency kit together in your car, in the house. Because I remember when I was training the home health aides, and I had them trained to have ready bags available for them and the patient in the event that they had to get out of the house quick. They can just have that emergency bag right by the door. Remember, we had to have those right by the door so you can grab and go bag.
Grab and go.
So, yeah. All right.
Shoes,
so cool. So
everything.
Whatever. Shoes, everything. Boots, all that kind of stuff. So, all right. So what else for 2011? What else happened for 2011? I know. How many people
Osama
split
bin
up
Laden.
Split up? Oh, my gosh. Osama.
Now, if you want to do the split up, to come back to Osama and finish off with that.
Osama bin Laden. Okay. So, no, we have to talk about Osama bin Laden because when that was the biggest issue when the president was campaigning for office. John McCain, if he had anything major over him, he had that over him, or that's what everybody said he had over him, was the fact that he was not prepared for international affairs or handling the military, that he had no knowledge. And remember that thing that they were talking about between Hillary and McCain and the other Republican candidates, and everybody was saying that what happens when that call comes in at 3 o'clock in the morning, what's he gonna do? Who do you want?
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Remember that?
That was something,
remember
right?
Remember that? Yeah.
Yes.
I remember that. Who do you want answering the phone when that call comes?
That was a hot commercial, though. I thought that was hot. Hill's got it. Hill had her game together with that. That commercial,
and I was thinking
like,
about that. Yeah, that commercial. That was heavy. That really made people, I know it made me think anyway. Who do I want to answer on the phone? And I am not going to go on the air and say what I said about that. That's a secret. You have to come to an event and hear me say that in person and pay $1 million a person. Because why I'm not saying what my response was to that. But
yes.
That's really something. Who do you want answering the phone at 3 o'clock in the morning? And I guess he proved that answer.
Didn't he?
He did. Especially
he
now,
did.
Remember the picture? Do you remember the picture when they showed when the military, the Navy SEALs were taking out Osama bin Laden when they were actually in the compound, and they showed the picture of the president, the vice president, Hillary Clinton, I want to call her by her title, Hillary Clinton, and there were several others,
Secretary
of State Clinton, and several, there was a few other people in there, and they were sitting, leaning forward, watching the video, remember?
What was that room? The situation room.
The situation room. And they, everybody was saying, oh, look at here, look at here.
Look at
what
here.
What is that look on her face? What is that look on her face? Because she had her hand over her mouth and she looked aghast. And people were trying to make that out to be, we wouldn't have wanted her to answer the phone. Remember? Do you remember that?
No, I didn't know. I never heard that. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I never heard that.
Yeah, when
but
they were looking at the picture.
Luckily, she wasn't the one answering the phone, but she was aghast.
Yeah, she was aghast.
But it was probably.
She said, no, she was sneezing. She said she was sneezing or coughing or something like that. That's what she said afterwards. I would have to go into the archives and look it up. Or I wish Jerome was here because I know he would remember. But it was that picture. I think I recall her saying it was some kind of a biological response she was having, some issue, some cough, some something. That, and it wasn't that she was afraid or anything else like that. Look at how much heck he caught over this bin Laden and
people are so hypocritical that they need need to hide their faces.
Oh my God.
For the last 10, no, this is 12, so let's go. Yeah, so 11 years. Osama bin Laden. Where's Osama bin Laden? Who knows? How hard could he be to find? What is going to ever happen? Oh, have we dropped the ball? No, it's not possible that we're going to just overlook the fact that he hasn't been found. And what country could he be in? Where is he now? What is he doing? Now we get him, and it's like, oh, why would you shoot him? I saw,
we
what's
want to
his
see
name?
The video. Why'd you
what's
throw
the guy's
away
name?
At
sea?
Who?
Michael Moore. Yeah, Michael Moore.
Oh, Michael Moore.
We're supposed to, this is a country where we put people on trial and we give them their day in court, and I wanted to put my shoes on and walk to wherever he was having that interview because it was in New York.
I think he lives in the Midwest.
No, but he was on one of the news, the nightly talking head shows here in town.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. At CNN, Headline News. And I wanted to say, you all are the most hypocritical collection of people to ever face the earth, to ever live on the face of the earth. When President Obama wanted to have the trials for the...
Yes, that's right. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Just take it from there.
No, I'm just.
Right.
No,
Remember when
they
wanted to have the trial for the people in Guantanamo Bay?
Right.
In New York.
And they had a fit. They're like,
you
don't
can't
bring them
do
here.
That.
No.
Don't you dare bring them here. We don't want them. Why would you do that? We can't afford it. That's too dangerous. Now you wanted to bring
a terrorist. You're going to introduce more terrorist attacks, and how are you going to protect everybody? And plus, we don't want to see them. You know, all that stuff. That's right.
And it's too expensive. We can't afford it. The security, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And then,
right.
Okay, so now he does what he should have done. Because you tell me where in the United States you're going to put
Osama
bin Laden. You just tell me where.
Oh, for crying out loud. Oh, my goodness. Can you
help
imagine?
Help me understand that.
And if
where?
He could get his hands on a mobile phone so he could text all the Taliban.
Exactly.
Because you know he was famous for all those videos. Wasn't that
right,
him?
He's
he
famous?
Was always on videos.
Video day after day, night. I mean, he loved it. And so, and then it was like, oh, he wasn't a threat because he was sitting in his... He was an old man, and he was sitting in the room, and all he did. He was not on dialysis.
On dialysis.
That was a lie.
Did they say that? They said he was on dialysis, though, right?
Not anymore.
That's what they said.
Oh, they said that initially when they first, I think when he first became the villain number one, that he had diabetes, but they didn't find any diabetic equipment in this place that he was living in. But he's living in a palace. He's living in a palace, you know. Oh, but he wasn't a threat. He was just an old guy sitting around watching TV. I'm like, you people are insane.
And then he was watching porn. Remember, Dennis?
Yeah, I love that. I thought that was great. It's like he's just an old guy sitting around watching TV. He was no longer a threat. Yes, he was, because I haven't seen any more videos. No more videos. And then
the other guy took over, right?
He got him, too. So now, you see, we had New Year's Eve, not one arrest, no terrorist threats, no orange, red.
You know what? Wait a minute. I even forgot about the fact. I'm so accustomed to hearing, oh, it's a
orange, red, purple level.
No, it's a rainbow. We got to get them all. We have guns. We have dogs. We have soldiers. We have people on every corner. It's orange. It's red. It's yellow. It's whatever. Don't get on the train.
So when I was out last night, the officers were standing around, just relaxed. They all friendly. Good evening, officers. Have a Happy New Year. Happy New Year. You know, they never speak to you. Happy New Year. They let us on the train free. They opened up the gates.
What? They let you on the train free? Wait, what city were you in? What city? You went out of town and didn't tell me? As I know, that was not New York. Wait a minute. Bloomberg must have left the country. He let somebody on the train for free?
Everybody. They opened up this thing and just let everybody go in. I couldn't wait to tell you.
What? Really?
But we didn't get back till so late that, you know, it was not possible to, I was beyond.
When you came back, you had to pay.
Yeah, we came back, we had to pay. But still, they let us through.
That was nice.
I thought it was fantastic.
Go, New York. It's your birthday?
That's right. They opened up the turnstile to let everybody just go on the train.
Well, you know they didn't announce that.
No, they did not. Maybe I shouldn't announce it, because maybe Mr. Bloomberg is like, I'm docking all this.
I know, because you know it's on camera. They're like, okay, who went through?
That's right. All he is
a
shot.
Oh, it's 2025. Pay your money, don't even try it. Just because that all lady said it on the radio.
That's right. No, don't you try that again. I love that. That's my favorite slang that I didn't remember.
That's New York.
Since I've been away for so long. It is all he is. You're going to pay.
From high school. That's right. From high school.
So
it was
funny.
Always the conversation. Oh, my gosh. That is hilarious. Well, good.
Yeah,
it was cool. But that's so true. I didn't hear all the alerts and the level of status of the emergency status in the city.
They had
that's
no
great.
Terror alerts. And so that was a good thing. And I don't understand, and I'm not really sure, and I was hoping Jerome would be on so he could, because, you know, he loves to explain all the political aspects of these Republican debates. So have to talk about the Republican debates. What do you think with this Newt Gingrich?
I stopped watching it. When did I stop watching it? Probably around, I've been so busy, but after Mr. Kane's. After all of his stuff, I didn't really pay as much attention. I know they had something on today, actually, that was about the Republican debates.
Yeah, because Mr. Gingrich was on and he was crying. I guess they were talking about some health issue, and his mother had some type of health issue, and I guess it choked him up. And so I said, well, you know, I can understand, because he was very close to his mother. Remember that? He was close to his mother. But, like, isn't this like the 400th time he's ran for president?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's been running for president since I was in high school. But I personally just don't. Yeah, I don't. I don't understand how you can say that President Obama hasn't done anything for this country, and the thing, the country's still standing. If he hadn't come along, this place would have fallen to the ground.
I don't know. I don't know where it would be, really.
I really don't know. And the fact that he got Osama bin Laden after 10 years, and they don't think that that's a big deal, and they have the nerve to be cavalier and matter-of-fact, and then to chastise him for doing that. Well, I want to see that picture, and we don't believe you. Just the mere fact that he hasn't come out with another video lets me know that he's gone.
Yeah.
But he should be applauded for that. They still should be applauding him for that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
He should be getting everybody's paycheck. He should go back and get some of George Bush's money for that.
Well, actually, George Bush is going back and getting some of his money for that, because now that even brought out more interest in President Bush. So he did some interviews talking about Osama bin Laden, and I know he wrote his book now and all this other. I believe he wrote a book. I saw a couple of interviews with people talking to him about Osama bin Laden. Well, what do you think about the fact that President Obama was able to capture him? And what do you think about, you know, they brought, you know how that happens when something comes up now. They go all the way back. So now he's getting another 15 minutes of fame as a result of it. And
well, I don't
Haiti
mind that. That doesn't bother me. Yeah, that's okay.
No, not at all. I wasn't suggesting that it should, you know, it's a problem, but just that everybody's able to have conversation about it, since it started on Bush's watch anyway. So, you know, what his being able to capture him brings everybody back into the fold to talking about that, because it was such a big deal. You know,
it's
so instead of people being upset about it, just like you said, everybody should be still applauding him for that one. And that was the reason why I thought that he should have been Person of the Year on the cover of Time magazine. I really did. They didn't put any one person on the cover. They put the protester on the cover.
No. What do you call it, the Wall Street people?
Well, they didn't say Wall Street. They didn't say anybody in particular. They just put protester. As a matter of fact, I don't think, and the picture that they had was not of somebody. It wasn't of Wall Street or one of the Occupy Wall Street people or Occupy people anywhere. It was, I want to say that it was a woman dressed. I'm pulling it up now on the internet. I want to say that it was a woman dressed in I'll tell you in a minute, so I don't say the wrong thing. But anyway, back to the Black Eyed Peas. Aren't we supposed to have Black Eyed Peas? See, where am I going to go get Black Eyed Peas now?
Four.
To eat.
Were you supposed to cook them today?
You're supposed to cook them? You can't just go get some and eat it?
You mean already prepare. I forgot where we are now. Yeah, well, I never saw them in a restaurant. But that's just me, because I don't, you know, I'm not in the area where they would have Black Eyed Peas. But if... Who cooks Black Eyed Peas? Soul food?
Yeah, soul food restaurant. Yes, there's a woman. Who's on the cover? She's Muslim. There's a Muslim woman on the cover. Called the protester. And there was a Muslim woman on the cover of the magazine.
Oh, okay.
And she said, and her the caption is, "My son set himself on fire for dignity."
Ew.
Yes, and that's what's on the cover of Time magazine Person of the Year. Person of the Year. And I'm like, where are they going with this? I didn't read the article. I need to read it. But and she says, and Tanisha added her 16-year-old daughter, dignity is more important than bread. So in Egypt, the incitements were a preposterously fraudulent 2010 national election, blah, blah, blah. So they go on basically about that. And these are the protesters, the people of the year. So I guess inside the magazine, they have protesters from all over. And that is what they consider, that's what they consider to be the person of the year.
Okay, so now the Black Eyed Peas, you were talking about actual Black Eyed Peas, not Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah, I was talking about eating Black Eyed Peas today. Speaking of Black Eyed Peas.
I didn't know you ate Black Eyed Peas. I don't eat them.
I don't. That's why I don't know where to get them to eat them today.
Oh, yeah. Nah.
So you're cooking Black Eyed Peas?
No, I don't eat them.
Oh, okay.
You know, I'm old school. I don't eat them. You would eat them? I never liked them ever. Even as a kid, never liked them. They were all right. But my mom never cooked them.
No, she
That's
never cooked
true.
Them.
That's not true. Here and there, but not really. She wasn't a Black Eyed Peas. She never really cooked them like, mm-mm.
Uh-uh.
You had to be Southern.
Yes, that was a Southern thing.
Every once in a while, she would make them in rice, but not very often. That wasn't my thing. But, okay, one more thing.
Uh-huh.
Casey Anthony.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, I had to go there.
Yeah, and that was your thing. I know you watched that trial from the day that little girl went missing. Didn't you see that?
Yes, from the day she went missing. Remember, I was talking about it for 3 years straight. Before I talk about Mr. Murray, Nancy Grace, and then Casey Anthony. Oh my God! So the other day I'm watching, and they ask, you know, all the lawyers come in. And they asked him why did they think. So they had Marsha Clark. She got a new lease on life.
OJ trial?
Yes, she got a new lease on life from this Casey Anthony trial.
Casey Anthony, okay. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And she has a book out and all that. But when they mentioned, what's his name? Mark Garagos. Now, he defended Scott Peterson.
Uh-huh.
You remember Scott Peterson?
Uh-huh.
That killed Lacey. The pregnant wife?
Yes.
Remember he out in Modesto, California?
In the boat.
Right. So,
took her out
he
the boat,
defended him.
Came back without her.
Yeah. Came back without her. Her and the baby. So, Mark Garagos, his attorney, was on. So, they had all these various sundry attorneys from way different cases. And Mark Garagos says, what are you going to say? It's the pretty white girl syndrome. The pretty young white girl syndrome. And I was like, does anybody else hear this? Am I the only person that hears this?
What did he mean by that?
That's why she got off. She's a pretty young white girl. What more do you want?
What?
That's what he said. I am not kidding.
Mark Garagos said that?
He said it.
And what did they say to him?
They agreed.
Well,
nobody disputed it. They agreed. It's like, you know, she's beautiful, she's young, and yeah.
So they let her kill her daughter?
She's white. Yeah, well, they did. Oh, actually,
this was on Dr. Phil.
This is on Dr. Phil, the beginning of this week. It just came back to my, because I think, you know how certain things shut your whole mind down? So
yeah.
when he said the pretty young white girl syndrome, my whole mind just shut.
Yeah.
I couldn't hear
no.
It. He was like, you know how they say, wah, wah, wah.
Wait, so did they all think that he, because, you know, a lot of times people, they have differing views. They don't necessarily think that she did it or, you know, whatever. So did they think
everybody's convinced she did it. Even the jury said, just because we let her off doesn't mean we thought she was innocent. Just because she was acquitted.
So why did they let her off?
Because they felt like the case wasn't proven. So the prosecutor was on, Marcia Clark was on, Dr. Phil was on, Garagos was on, and a couple other talking heads. And they came to the conclusion that she was guilty, Marcia Clark. But they had to end it because she was yelling and screaming to the top of her lungs. The prosecutor, of course, he was furious because she got away with it. And in my opinion, now I'm not an attorney or anything like that, but in my opinion, just by observing the whole situation, the whole gory situation, the mere fact that the little girl is no longer with us, and we know she didn't walk away and die, she didn't end up down the street from her house in a plastic bag, that alone, and since her mother was the last person to see her with her, to me, that it's a no-brainer.
Tell me the specifics in that case again.
Okay. This girl...
Some cases. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this girl is with her daughter. She and her mother and father live together. She's a young girl. She has a baby, say around 18 years old. Now, you know, it's tough for a young girl having a baby, and she wants to go out and party and this and that and the other, and the parents are starting to get a little bit peeved with her, like, you need to take care of your child. So as time goes on, she's getting irresponsible. She steals money from her mother. She steals money from her father. She steals money from the grandparents. You know, she's getting out of control. The parents, her and the mother have a fight because a lot of this stuff they leave out when they talk about the situation. But her and her mother had a physical confrontation almost. And the next day, the daughter is missing. Now, the father supposedly went to work. Mother supposedly went to work. They come back, and the girl's not there anymore. She's hanging out with some guy or whatever. And they keep asking her, where is the daughter? Oh, she's with Zanny the nanny. Zanny's taking care of her. And then they're like, who is this Zanny? We need to see the baby now. So days have gone by. Now this is coming up on weeks have gone by. They haven't seen this little girl. And then ultimately, she says Zanny the nanny steals the girl. She has kidnapped the girl.
Okay, so she went out to a party and she brought the girl to the nanny is what she's saying.
This is what she's saying. She was saying she was going to work. So then it turns out that she had gone to, she had stolen money, stolen checks, and she become arrested. So in the process of this, now that she's in jail now, they're asking her, where is the little girl? Zanny the nanny still has her. Well,
okay, wait. She got arrested on her way to work or from work or whatever. But
wherever she is, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But she's never really had a job. She was lying. She was out partying. She never had a job. They thought she was working for 2 years. She had no job. She says Zaneta, whatever her name is, has the baby. Well, Zaneta turns up and says, my name is Zaneta, whatever this name is, and I never saw her or the baby. I don't even know this girl. Because now Zaneta.
Why did she get the girl's name?
Girl, who knows? Maybe she was made it up. They say she made it up. I don't believe that for one instance. I believe she was probably in the complex where the lady lived, saw the name, and said, oh, okay, I'll use her name. So she says the lady comes forward. Now she lost her job. She's having all these hardships because she's been accused of kidnapping.
Oh, my goodness. Okay,
so finally, she comes up and says, oh, I did not kidnap this girl. I never met this woman in my entire life. I never saw this baby. I don't know this woman. This is ridiculous. Okay, so now the girl says, finally, ultimately, I don't know what happened to the baby. So now a year goes by.
She admits that she lied on this woman.
Right. She lied on the woman. And so I personally think that Zanny was a short-term nickname for Xanax. I believe she was giving the baby Xanax and putting her to sleep so she can go out and party when the parents weren't, you know, aware of this, putting the baby to sleep by that. So in the process of all this now, they find the baby. She's still in jail for stealing checks and whatever she stole, and they find the body. So then they charge her with the murder.
Where
and then you know the rest. They found the body in the neighborhood, in their neighborhood, wrapped in
trash bag or something.
Trash bags with duct tape over the mouth and nose. And in the process, and prior to that now, the girl's car had been found by the police, and they call her, the parents up and say, we have your daughter's car. It's in the impound. They go to the car. They open the trunk, and they say the smell of decomposition knocks them back. You know, they thinking that the baby's in the car. So it smells so bad, they think the baby's in the car. Okay, so that was one of the issues that they claim sunk their case, because you can't put a smell, you can't use a smell as evidence. But they had experts that come along and say, you know, what kind of maggots. It was really gross. Maggots were in the car, how long it takes for those to form and develop and blah, blah, blah. It was on and on and on in this case. But the bottom line to me was that the girl turns on her father and says her father had been molesting her whole life. And then her father knew that the baby was dead because he found the baby at the bottom of the pool. And none of this was true. I know for a fact that none of this was true. None of this was true. So the case became, you know, just so convoluted and crazy. But I still feel that she just walked away. She got away with murder. She got away with murder. And see, they wanted to charge me. They felt like they overcharged her. This is what the jury felt, like if they had given her them some other options, they could have found her guilty. I still think it was ridiculous. I think they took it out on the father. I think they believed that the father molested her. And I don't think that the father molested her under any circumstances. And I also feel that... I think I told you this before. Somebody on the jury had a cruise that they had to go on the weekend of the 4th of July
weekend.
Oh, and
weekend. They wanted out. They're like, okay, we're good.
Look, we got to go. If we sit here and deliberate, I'm going to miss my cruise. I already paid my money. I'm out of here. That's what I really feel happened ultimately, because they know she was guilty. Come on. It's ridiculous. So that was another big 2012. Now, you want to do the breakups, don't you? You got to do the breakups.
Yes.
You got to tell me, did Will Smith break up? You have to take a break?
No, we're going to take a quick break, but we have Jerome is here with us. So
okay.
I want to. Yes, he's here. So
okay.
I want to, like, I wish I had drum roll on, you know, on the radio, but I don't. So anyway. Jerome Esprit of EspritNet News is with us tonight. Happy New Year. Happy 2012,
Happy
Jerome. Hey.
Happy New Year to the both of you. I was just enjoying the program, and then when I hear my name, of course, it wakes me up. I'm listening to Roddy, so I'm like, wait a minute, I had nothing to do with this. No one's going to call me. So I feel like just totally unprepared to even say anything. So. I don't know. It's almost like being on hold and that music's on, and then somebody comes and goes, hello, and you're like, huh? Who's this? You know, so I'm sorry for not being prepared. How are you guys?
Oh, wonderful. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
We're just freestyling.
I'm good. I know, you know, and I thought that's a good idea to freestyle. It's a part of the whole wrap up. What happened last year is more important that we go forward, but it's cool. You got to freestyle sometimes. That's a good. It makes for a good show.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we had some questions for you earlier. I don't know if you heard us calling you. We've been calling you all the last couple of hours.
No, you had some questions for me? Okay, I'm prepared for them. I didn't hear the questions, but I'm with you guys. So whatever questions.
Ronnie, do you remember?
Oh, what was
Ronnie,
I was asking?
You had,
what was I talking about at that point?
I think it was Osama bin Laden.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember the question, though. I thought that you could fill us in on why President Obama is not receiving the respect and the accolades and why people had lost concern about the Osama bin Laden issue. Like, now it's like, who cares? Whatever. Big deal.
Well, yeah, you know, the thing about life and generally on how we've been conditioned, especially as Americans, but just Europeans generally, European countries, is that everybody moves through fear. And so once Osama is not around anymore, there is no boogeyman to frighten everyone for. So that really plays against Republican politics, because they need to create a villain to beat the president. That's why your poll numbers always fluctuate so much, where they say people are displeased with the president and all this other nonsense, is because the only people who respond to polls this early is people who don't like status quo. The people who support the president, you won't be polled. It's not really how that
works.
That's
what I thought, because I want to ask you about why do you feel like they are – is it propaganda? Mitt Romney is above him. He was going to they were going to vote today. 45% say that they would vote for Mitt Romney. It's like, who did they ask? Three people at the grocery store that didn't want to be bothered?
No, they asked. They're asking people who are paying attention to the Republicans. Who cares about those nuts? Like, seriously.
Who cares about the whole crew of them?
Right. You have a very smart president coming in at a very bad time of this country as far as, like, the economy and all that stuff is concerned. Just a very bad time on how the rest of the world looks at this country. All of that stuff is leveled out because we think that somebody's there finally reasonable. So now the people who are reasonable have backed out of politics, and the crazies are going, we need to stir it up. And that is what they do. And so just to get past this primary, they have to start saying how much they hate this guy. And then they have to fudge those numbers. And then they have to, you know, just, I mean, I think it was it FactCheck.org just did something recently as the biggest lies or something of the year or something. And the number one was that the Ryan budget was going to get rid of Medicare or Medicaid. And the truth is, that is misleading. They are lying by saying that. And this is fact-checked. And so what they're saying is that, no, they're going to keep Medicare. It was just the people who are already eligible for it or who are 55 and over will keep Medicare. Everybody else are not getting Medicare. They're getting a voucher system. But the concession is that people who are already getting it are going to still get it until they pass away. Now, what kind of concession is that? That's still lying. They're changing Medicare. They're creating a voucher system, and they're going to name that Medicare. So the truth is, they plan to get rid of Medicare. But the lie is, no, if you're 65, you're going to keep getting it. So why don't you vote for us to get rid of it for the young people?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's what the Ryan budget has for Medicare. And then a big lie I think they should have put on there is the fact that Social Security has $2.5 trillion in it. There is a $2.5 trillion surplus in Social Security. Now, nobody and their mother will talk about the fact that we have $2.5 trillion for Social Security. Social Security is not going bankrupt. It never has been. The only way that Congress can get to that money and put it in Wall Street is to actually disband it or put legislation up that the president has to sign to abolish Social Security in its regular form, because the way Social Security was set up, which was very smart by, I guess it was Truman? I can't remember Social Security. Mm-hmm. But when they put the legislation up, they wrote into the law that nobody can touch the funds in Social Security, not for budget, not for deficit, not for military, not for nothing. So there's a $2.5 trillion surplus in Social Security that nobody can touch, and the Congress needs to get rid of that law so that they can touch that money.
Oh my God!
The big lie is, you know, you only have people like the independent senator. What's his name? Barry Sanders, I think. In Barry Sanders is Vermont, maybe, or New Hampshire. But he's the only one who always says that. He goes, "We have $2.5 trillion in Social Security. Why are we talking about Social Security?" He is the only one. So the Democrats and the Republicans and major media will not say that out loud to anybody.
Amazing.
They sure won't, because I've never heard it except when you say
never.
It's not even something that you can't Google and find out. Like, that's the sad thing about it. It's like we specifically tell news and news stories in a way to make people upset. So the only way to get people to react is to say Social Security is going to bury us and people are getting something that they don't earn. And that's the Republican stance. Oh, get rid of welfare because they don't deserve that. They need to get out and work. And everybody goes, yeah, I know somebody who ain't working. And it's like, that's silly.
Oh. What did you think about Newt Gingrich with that comment about the kids that should be janitors?
Right, but it all fits the same vein, right? You guys need to help your own self out, and if you can't graduate high school, you might as well be a janitor. Like, that plays well in Republican circles. But think about this when they go into general election. They're going to mask all this stuff for Newt Gingrich, right? Newt Gingrich divorced his wife when she had cancer and she was in the hospital. He married two of his mistresses. And when he was prosecuting, and they impeached Bill Clinton in Congress under Newt Gingrich for the Monica Lewinsky stuff. And Newt Gingrich's current wife was his mistress, and she worked at Congress during the same time he did that.
He was married
with another woman. His current wife was an aide in Congress, and he was having an affair with her at the same time he impeached Bill Clinton for Monica Lewinsky.
Oh, now, boy, that's going to be juicy.
No, but I'm saying, but those are facts, just general timeline stuff. But you think 60 Minutes or ABC or NBC would sit there with Newt Gingrich and say, hey, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about the budget deficit. It's like, are you crazy? Mm-hmm. Like, are you crazy for, like, skating past personality character issues to tell us, but he has really good ideas on how to close or handle our relationship with Iran? Like, do you really think that works?
No.
We're a nation that talks about somebody's birth certificate. We can't prove that it's authentic. You know what? You can't prove that anybody's is authentic.
Absolutely not.
The reason that, well,
you
the
can
reason
find
that
out
we can't.
One way. There's one way to find out, though. Don't have one. You'll find.
look at it this way. Now, I used to work for an insurance company, right? And so as a programmer, there's a law that says that if you have one person policy, like the way the law is that you have to display a person's insurance policy the exact same way it was when they signed it. You can't have a different font. You can't change new computer systems. You can't print them off on different pieces of paper. It has to look exactly the same. So if you have somebody who's like 99, you have to be able to display their policy exactly how it was. So the problem is in that case, well, it's not a problem. It's really good practice to say, I need to see that authentically how it was. No replications, no duplications of it. Right. Well, our computer, our technology has grown so fast in the last 10, 15 years that everything is a replication of something else anyway. So you can make something with Photoshop look like, you know, me and Beyonce was hanging out at whatever. You can do that these days. And you cannot trust any kind of replication of anything anymore. So you can have conspiracy theories all you want to, always.
Wow.
Like, we're in a technology age that you can make something look like something that it wasn't.
Well,
so
I don't believe they would have elected him and let him stay there if he wasn't American.
Well, you know what? To Newt Gingrich's credit, somebody asked him that question, and he said, look, I think we're past that. He is president. He wouldn't have been able to be a senator. He wouldn't have gotten a Harvard Law School. Like, they would have had to run so many checks on him to be in that position that he would not have even been there. Like, so it's not possible to actually be president thinking that nobody ran a background check on you ever.
Oh, I mean, really. They run background checks, like I said earlier, they were not early, but I was saying that if you don't have your birth certificate, that's one way to find out whether you're American or not. Because I just had to get my birth certificate, and I'm telling you, it's amazing what you have to go through to get your birth certificate.
Oh yeah,
so
yeah,
there's
a lot of cases that you have to have your birth certificate. I mean, they run background checks on you. So
exactly.
even with your passport stuff. Well, even with your passport. Imagine how many times the president has flown as a congressman or done things that he left the country. You can't get a passport without a birth certificate.
No.
I mean, you can get one, but it will just be a travel. Like, they would know specifically that you don't have one by
no,
then.
They know. They go through. They really do. They run in-depth background checks when you don't realize it. When you just.
Oh, yeah.
You're oblivious to it.
Yeah, and one of the news stories that I did last week was the fact that they're working on an algorithm for social networking sites like Facebook and Twitter, and credit card companies or banks now want to check the credit of your friends, like of your friends on your friends list, and create an algorithm for people who are potentially good or bad investments for the bank. So if your friends are rich, they kind of going to assume that you are. And if your friends are mostly poor deadbeats, they're going to assume that you are. Now, they said that they were using it for advertisement. Like, you can get a platinum card and you need a blue one. Like, they were going to do it that way.
Oh,
but what they're going to use it for is for your employment stuff as well. So all of this stuff is getting linked. So every bit of information that you put up now is starting to go through some sifting of identifying identifying criteria for your person. So you have to be careful of this.
Facebook was going to turn out to be something that you have to really, really watch your P's and Q's. Stay on the straight and narrow. I just have this really creepy feeling about it. You could look up an article and look down and see your picture pop up. It has nothing to do with Facebook. Everything has an F now. Everything you click on has an F.
Yes. So what you do about that is you sign out of Facebook, always log out of Facebook, because Facebook has in it some Facebook can now track the sites that you go to even though you're not on Facebook. So it actually saves it into one of your temp files, and then it's actually telling you what pages that you go on. So Facebook actually knows all of these other sites that you're going to, plus when those sites have Facebook applications in them or Facebook hooks in them, they will pull up your friends that read this article or your friends who were on this site. They'll do that, and there's a setting in Facebook that you have to uncheck allowing applications to access your Facebook information. I can't think of what it's called, but you have to uncheck that. See, and the sad thing is that nobody is protecting your privacy. You are the only one that protects your privacy. If nobody tells
right.
you that, they're totally raking everybody over the coals.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me this. Let me jump in for a second. Tell me this, something you have to check to prevent Facebook, and this is beyond just logging out of Facebook when you get off of it. You have to
right.
check something in the settings to prevent them from tracking your activity online.
Well, no. There are two different functions. You inside of Facebook, there's a checkbox that says allow other applications or allow applications to I can't think of what it's called. It's allowing other applications to verify. Like verify that you're on Facebook. It's worded kind of strangely. I'll find out what it is and let you
uh-huh.
know. But it's worded pretty strange. And uh-huh. if you check that box, any site that has a Facebook, I can't even think of what it's called, has a Facebook app to it or a Facebook hook, that they'll pull your Facebook information. But what you have to do is you have to constantly go into Internet Explorer or whatever browser that you're listening to and delete all of your temporary settings every time you go in and out of Facebook, because what it's doing is it's accumulating the your traffic inside of those temp files to let Facebook know where you are.
Mm-hmm.
I know that sounds inconvenient because people like to just check the box to say always sign me on whenever I sign on. But what you're saying to that particular program is look and see where I am just in case I sign on. So it's always sending a signal to Facebook. They're keeping tracking on you. And I just wrote a story for this particular week of Apple just applied for a patent to register facial recognition software to unlock your iPhone or your iPad or your iTouch pad. So they are going to have, when you lock your phone, you'll be able to turn it on. Face recognition is going to hit your face and then unlock your phone. Now, that all of this stuff is problematic in the big picture. I'm sorry, you guys were quiet on that last one.
Yeah, we got quiet, didn't we?
I know. You guys are scared me. What happened?
Oh, because it sounds like enemy of the state.
Yes, but just like our phone conversation, there's nothing to be scared of because this has been going on for a while.
It's too late now anyway. It's all, you're linked to everything. There's nothing you can do.
Right. Well, yes, there is. I put a lot of bad information on me out there, so you can't track me if you wanted to. It's really funny to me because it's just like a running joke with my friends. They're like, you are nutty about that stuff. And I said, I'm a computer person, so I know how data is stored. You sort on key phrases, name combination stuff, and every time you put out that information is the only way that people get your information back. So when I go to the grocery store, they have the little discount cards, and I signed up for one year, and they said, well, we need your Social Security number just in case you want to cash checks at the grocery store. And I said, why would I want to cash checks at the grocery store and the bank's right there? They was like, for convenience. And I said, yeah, so the FBI can actually do a keyword search and say, this fool don't eat nothing but tacos and drink Pepsi. They only figured out what you eat and do a really nice profile on you, on your shopping habits. It tells a lot about you and the combination of things that you do. So you use your credit card at Wendy's, and they're like, you eat a lot of fast food. Like, you can get profiles on people, but we voluntarily give them information, which I voluntarily give them a lot of bad information.
Oh, so, okay. That makes sense.
Work it out. Right, because it's just in me playing, right? It's not like I drink or do drugs or do anything illegal. I figure if the same people don't do that, how would you differentiate the same people from the people who are not, who are insane? You have to be conscious about your own person and your own stature. So anyway, so with enemy of the state, the truth was is that that's very commonly known as it's a known thing in computer science that since the telephone company has established nationwide telephone communication long-distance service, that in Washington, D.C., there are acres of mainframes underground recording every phone conversation since they put in the phone system. It's always been like that.
Right.
So now they just have to pick it out of the air. That is true. The Internet it was put up for the government to begin with. So there's three parts of the Internet. There's a public part, a private part, and a government pipe in the Internet. And the private, semi-private one is flat controlled by the government. So that www name server goes to government servers and then sends you someplace else. And about 10 years ago, I think, is when they let Network Solutions and ICANN, and they created this industry so that they can register domain names. But you used to be able to only register them through the government. So all of that traffic is going through the same place.
Hmm.
I don't mean to make this a very scary show, my fault.
No.
I'm not a big conspiracy
guy. No,
it's okay.
I mean, it's nothing to really be afraid of. It's, what can you do?
Well,
it's good to know, though.
I was going to say, I'm not a conspiracy theorist guy. I'm a conspirator. So as a strategist, I do this stuff for a living. So, no, but I'm just telling you from that perspective that you get to control all the data that goes out about you, but when you don't handle the responsibility of it, somebody's going to make money off of you and somebody's going to sell you. So you have one or two options in life, and there is nothing in between. You can either be led or you can lead, but there's no option in between because when you choose not to lead – is when you choose to follow other folks.
That's funny. I just did that today. I registered for something online, and they were Oh, well, we're going to sell your information. We're going to share your information. So you have to check the boxes. So I check, don't send me any text. Don't send me any this. Don't send me any that. If I want to buy products, I'll find it myself. You know?
Right.
And Kathleen, yeah, that's the same thing. When I went to register to vote for you, they wanted a picture of me.
Yeah, somebody else told me that too, that they wanted a picture because they couldn't load a picture or something, they couldn't vote. But some people were able to figure out how to put up pictures of like a flower or an ocean or something like that. So I thought that was interesting.
Oh,
so,
if you do it online, they want a picture?
It was okay. On the Caribbean Fever website when they were voting for my book to win the book club. They asked for
a picture.
And if you didn't put up a picture, then you couldn't sign up. You couldn't register for the website. So, and one of the reasons I know that they do that on some sites is because they have people who are, you know, trying to be, I don't know what they're doing. They're not real people or whatever it is that they're doing,
trying to spam
and so forth. So they do that. But even still, some people don't want to put up their picture. So, like, a couple of my friends put up pictures of birds or whatever, and it took it. But I'm on Facebook right now, and I went into the privacy selections, and the privacy settings, rather. And there's this there's one link there that says tag suggestion. And it says, this helps your friends save time adding tags to their own photos, especially when labeling many photos from one event. If a friend uploads a photo that looks like you, we'll suggest adding a tag of you. Your friend can ignore any suggestion and nothing gets tagged automatically. You won't be tagged automatically. I've never seen this before, but it was already automatically enabled. So it said suggest tagging you when friends upload photos that look like you, and it was enabled, and I didn't enable that. So I had to go in and disable it to say don't suggest tagging me. Now, that's one thing. You disable it, but the more interesting thing is how does Facebook know when a picture goes up that looks like me?
Oh, okay, that's a good question. Well, two things about that. That happened probably almost 2 months ago. I think it was a little over that. That setting was added. And I did a story about facial recognition software. Google CEO said, I think this is an invasion of privacy, but what happens is that if you're in a mall and somebody takes a picture of their friend and they post it on Facebook, they're going to say, is this Kathleen Williams in it? And so the problem is that Facebook will recognize you in anybody's picture, regardless if it's a friend of yours or not, which is a bad policy because, say, you go to a grocery store and somebody goes, ooh, you know what? I wonder who she is. And I take a picture with my camera and I try to look her up on Facebook.
Oh, my goodness.
So you can see how that stuff can get a little crazy. So you uncheck boxes like that, but Facebook said, oh, no, it's easier so that when your friends do something, like you can sell something in a way that sounds non-intrusive, but I can tell you, looking at it from a stalker's perspective, that got to be lovely. If you need to find somebody's information, you just pass by their house and take a picture of them and then see if the facial recognition catches them on Facebook.
Creepy.
Yeah, but like I said, so you have to always
I'm not a big Facebooker against... anyway. I'm not a Facebooker. I every 2 months, 3 months, I might go there. I'm just not it's not something that intrigues me. You know why? I am a conspiracy theorist. It's a bad thing. It is, right, Kathleen? I have it bad.
Yeah.
I really do have it bad. So I always believe that things like that are going to come back to bite me. I feel like it's going to be a bad thing in the long term that they know too much about you. I was telling everybody, I said, don't get on this site and tell all your business, where I'm going, who I'm hanging out with, you know, out drinking. You got pictures of yourself with liquor.
Right.
Yeah.
There was a story about this woman in Ontario, Canada. She was getting disability, and they stopped her disability because she posted a Facebook picture of her on vacation, and they said it looks like you're healthy enough to work, and they canceled her disability.
Now you see that? You see
so,
that?
I mean, it's not. Yeah, it's not that it's unprecedented. Yeah, I did that story, I think, last week or the week before last. But you know what? That's not unprecedented. It's you have to.
But
watch
is she not allowed to go on vacation? Did they say, oh, you on disability, you can't go anywhere?
No, that just means that she now has to go back and prove the fact that she needs to be on disability, which means it was just wrong for them to cut her off anyway. But I'm telling
yeah.
you, people are looking. So don't put anything in the public sphere that you don't want to come bite you, you know. And so all of mine usually is pretty much set to private settings, but I still watch what I put out there because it's still not private.
No matter
right,
what.
Exactly.
Right. When your friends can go to your Facebook page and download your information, that's a problem because they all can now. There's a button to download history.
Huh?
There's a button to download history for somebody. Like if you go to your friend's page, you can download history on them. So, but all of that stuff, like I said, that's why you have to kind of watch, you know, what you put out, because everything is internal to, in a spiritual sense, everything is a physical manifestation of your thoughts, and everything that happens is created by you. So when you put something out there, it's the only way people can use stuff against you. I had an interesting story about that. As much as I've done political campaigns and all of that other good stuff, someone said to me, I tried to find out some information about you, and it was very difficult. It is very difficult to find, like, ex-girlfriend kind of stuff about you. No, the trick is that you can ask them, and they won't tell you. Like, the point is that people hold tight to your information if you hold tight to your information. Right? You can't call any of my friends. They will tell me that you are looking for me before they tell you that they know me. And that is just a
those
that
are good
is
friends.
Just the way you handle. Well, not just that. It's just because you are as strong as your network, right? And so if people respect you for the things that you do, they are not going to, oh, I'm sorry, I'm being nice. That is true that they respect me, and I used to be really harsh about this. A friend of mine gave away my phone number to someone. And mind you, the girl was really pretty, and I knew her, and we were cool. But I went to him, and I said, the next time you get my phone number to somebody, you don't have it. I will never answer your phone call again. So for people who didn't know me, I had to actually threaten him. But beyond that, he goes, no, she was really nice. I said, that's really, thanks for giving it to her, but you won't have it anymore if you give my number to someone. So I literally did that because he didn't know me well enough to know that I don't accept a lot of randomness because I know what that means. Like in a security, like in protecting your information, you have to let natural occurrence happen spiritually. You are not supposed to have people just randomly coming at you because people just send folks at you all day, especially if they feel that you have value.
See, I knew that. I always say that. And people think that I'm weird. I said, well, thank you, Jerome. Now I know I'm not weird.
Oh, we're both weird. But either way, no, but you're not supposed to have it. And I was explaining that to someone when we were doing fundraisers. And I said, well, wealthy people are like that. Like, you can't go back and put 20 years in with anybody. So if the person that recommends me to you is not somebody I know, I'm not going to talk to you. I have friends
right.
who might need something, let alone me just taking randomness out of everybody else.
Right.
What kind of value do I have to them as a friend if I go, no, I already know you. Let me give this to somebody I don't know. So, you know, but I've always been like that, so that's nothing new.
Oh, good.
Go
ahead, Jerome.
No,
I was
waiting.
Ronnie, you wanted to talk about Dr. Murray.
The wrap up on Dr. Murray.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dr. Murray, they threw away the key, and okay, I knew he was guilty. Everybody knew he was guilty. I felt I felt, you know, I was talking about Michael today, you know, we were just reflecting on how it seemed like he'd been alive until that trial happened. And now it seems like, you know, like his spirit finally gets a chance to just rest and move on to wherever, you know, to the next phase. Because this was such an intense experience, and I felt like he didn't have any clue that that last day was going to be his last day. This is what I feel. This is just me thinking that, you know.
Michael or Dr.?
Yeah, Michael. No, Michael.
Oh, okay.
You know, I got the doctor over here. I'm good, you know. I've got the doctor over here. I'm paying $100,000 for basically for him to do whatever it is I need to do so that I can feel good about what it is he's doing for me. Basically, he's a drug dealer, and he's taking care of me. And when he took that last breath, he was in shock. I know he was. I knew he could not believe that this was going to take him, he was going to die. I know for a fact they said he died when they looked at his body, his eyes was open. So if he had been sleeping, he would have been asleep, and he would have just passed away into sleep. But he probably was drifting off. That drug wears off and on. They say it doesn't last longer than 30 minutes or whatever. I'm not really, you know, I'm not a medical professional, but it doesn't last that long. So you come out, and he gets ready to breathe, and there's no air there. I know he was in shock. Dr. Mary, to me, was just negligent. And Dr. Mary, and I'll say it a million times, Dr. Mary was not ready for Hollywood. And that's so unfortunate for Michael. He went and as far as I'm concerned, went basement shopping in the doctors of the lower caliber, because he probably had gone to a million doctors and they were like, no, we're not doing
well,
this.
That's what they said. That's what they were saying on the news. And Jerome, I can't remember if you were telling me this, but they were saying that Dr. Murray, being not the base of doctors, but being not as successful maybe as the others or as the other cardiologists and so forth, and the ones that he went to first. And everybody told him no, so he had to find somebody who was willing essentially to not be a physician but be a yes man and just do exactly what Michael said do, and nobody else who was respecting their career was willing to do that. So it was kind of like Michael, I'm not saying that he wanted to die, but that he knew what he was doing. He wasn't going for a doctor. He was going for somebody who would do what he wanted to do, what he wanted them to do, and not really protect his health.
Well, yeah, this is a hard case.
Isn't that what we call an addict?
Yeah.
Right? A true addict?
You know, this is. I'm going to have to defer to you guys on this. I have not paid any attention to it because the details of even Murray's conduct and stuff is almost kind of, to me, just radically inappropriate. Just because we lost such a big person, like in the universe, we lost a big person, and of course he wasn't doing things like he was supposed to, but in Michael's case. He is Michael Jackson, and he's just not going to walk into a clinic at all ever. And so whatever it is that he was convinced of, like that he needed to take whatever to sleep, may have been seriously a condition that he believed. And so he just needed somebody to do whatever he told him to do. So I don't know what to even say about that. Murray should at least knew how to give CPR. I mean, that is kind of sad, and the silly part about his conduct is that if he would have just revived him, he would have probably been fine.
Yeah, that's a good point too. That he needed somebody to do. He needed somebody to be with him, and not. Yes, he's not going to go into a clinic, but I would assume that he would go. Well, I don't know. It's traumatic.
It's traumatic. But what hurts is that Michael was to that point in the, you know, his addiction had gotten to the point where he no longer had control of his life. It had, you know, his life was out of control. Because when you think of the fact that, okay, we go to the doctor, I ask every question. They, by the time they're done, they look at you like, oh, why did they let her in here? You know, why, oh, would you, could you, I'm a doctor, just trust me. You know, whereas he's saying, okay, give me this drug at my house, and I've got my little kids running around. And they don't know what's going on, and nobody else is going on, knows what's going on, and the kids are being, you know, the kids are being nurtured by the chef and the bodyguards and whoever else is in, and the parents can't get in, and he's got everybody locked out. You know, he's a drug addict. He's a drug addict, and he needed some help. And the fact that this doctor would be willing to go ahead and enable him to further his drug addiction and then to his death. I know he's sitting in that jail on he's furious. You know he's furious.
Furious, what do you mean? Like upset that it happened to him or upset that
exactly.
it happened
that
to
it,
Michael?
Oh, he could care less about Michael. The fact that it happened to him, you know, he doesn't feel like he should have gone to jail for that. And I think he should have gone to jail for that. I do believe he should have gone to jail for that. But I do believe that he should not have gone to jail alone. I believe that the people that did the same thing that Anna Nicole Smith should have done some time too, if we're going to put people in jail.
And that's, you know, it's an interesting, it is something interesting to think about, because if you are the celebrity of sorts that you will not walk into a clinic or will not regularly go into a hospital, you're on the road and you're having some health issues or whatever they are, whether drug addict or you need some kind of other dialysis or whatever it is that you need, and you need and you want to work and you can afford to have somebody coming with you, you're not necessarily hiring that person to do, you're hiring them for their expertise. So that in itself means that you should be deferring to their recommendations with regards to your health, and also that you're expecting that they will, if you, you're expecting that they will recognize when you're in trouble and do something about it, whether it is force you to make a change, force you to get some help, or resign and say, listen, that I'm not willing to do. So at some point, you know, you that's, and I feel that's part of the reason why we put the burden on Murray, well, not we, but the jury put the burden on Murray, because just like you're saying, Jerome, he didn't know basic things like CPR. His standard of practice may have indicated that he just wasn't a qualified physician to take care of anybody, much less take care of this particular man, and also that he put himself in a position to kill his patient.
Well, I think I'm going to say this: possibly his skill, his CPR skills may have not have been lacking, but he's a cardiologist. It's just like the hairdressers that I encounter. You know, I can go to a hairdresser and they'll say, all I do is cut. I'm not coloring you. I'm not, listen, basically, if you want a haircut, that's good. I'm good. I'll do it for you. But I'm not doing that. Or you could go to an attorney and says, listen, basically I handle divorces. Please don't ask me about your taxes. You know, I'll refer you to so-and-so, but that's not my expertise. Now, he probably understood tax law. Every hairdresser knows how to put a color on. They know how to blow dry. They know how to give you a conditioning treatment or whatever. They've learned that, but they don't specialize in it. So I believe the same thing happened with Dr. Murray. He's a cardiologist now. That's out of his realm. When in the world is a cardiologist going to be given CPR?
Well, yeah, I see your point. But everybody in
he should know how, but is he going to do that? No. If somebody needs that level of treatment in surgery, is he going to be doing it? No, he's going to step back and let.
No. They better. The cardiologist, from the cardiologist to the surgical technician to everybody, they all have. When you call a
you have
a code,
to know how to revive people.
That's right.
Not,
everybody.
He's not excused.
Well,
from
why didn't he know how then? How could he get away
but
with not knowing how?
That's why he's sitting in jail. That's why he's
right.
in jail, because nobody can understand. Nobody could answer that question, and it's absolutely mandatory for anybody. We don't care what level you are up the food chain or down the food chain. CPR is basic, and as a cardiologist, you have to know advanced CPR. There's even levels of CPR. If you work in an emergency room, you work in the a surgical suite, so on and so forth. You have to be the one, and if you have a private practice. You really
which is
have
what he said he
know.
Had, right?
If you have a private practice, you are not exempt. You not only have to take CPR, you have to remain current, have your CPR card remaining current, and you have to make sure that everybody in your practice is also trained in CPR. Because if you have to run a code, you run the code.
Right,
you're
in a private clinic, somebody needs to know how to do CPR.
Exactly.
And the doctor is the first.
Well, I said somebody needs to know how, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that physician. That cardiologist.
No, think of it this way, Ronnie. If you have a college degree, you need to know how to read. Like, there are general ed classes that you have to take, or it's negligence by your college for giving you a diploma if you can't read your diploma. Like, there's general ed. So when you're a doctor, now, and I have an ex-girlfriend who is a doctor, and I remember she used to tell me, I would go, and she's an anesthesiologist, so she puts people under. So she said, I would go in and watch the nurses fumble with giving someone an IV. Now, she has to do that to put people to sleep, obviously. But she would go, let me just take their blood, because the people would feel comfortable with the doctor doing it anyway. She said, I know how to do that. I can find a vein. But the issue is that do you lose your skills are you supposed to lose your skills because you're at the top of the food chain? Do you not know how to walk and talk anymore just because you get to ride a bike? Right.
It's like exactly.
You as a doctor, he has to know basic general practices. I mean,
I can't understand how did he get away with it.
Right, but I'm saying they fundamentally made me take a CPR class.
Had
I was going into a medical field, but just because of the class I took, I had to know CPR.
Everybody has to take it. Doctors have to take it. But I know that a lot of doctors are like, let this guy do it. You know, when they get into the specialist area.
They can be lazy and not want to do it if other people around them can do it. It's like delegating responsibility generally. That's why your doctor won't take your blood pressures, because there's nurses and assistants and everybody else who can do it. But your doctor knows how to take your blood pressure.
Right. He knows
how to check a pulse.
He knows how to check pulse.
Mm-hmm.
He does. My doctor knows how to take blood pressure. He never does it.
The dentist knows
how to clean your teeth, but he doesn't do it, and that's why I'm saying maybe his skill level had diminished because he became this, I was really disappointed with him.
Just holding somebody's nose or breathing in their mouth and doing compressions is like, I mean, that's fundamental. Like, you cannot not know that as a doctor.
But that was, unfortunately, that's not what Michael Jackson needed, though.
He needed
oxygen.
Well, but at the same time, he could have breathed air into his lungs to keep him breathing just until they got there. But they said that he didn't perform any CPR on him until later. They said that possibly if he would have did it immediately, he would have got his respiratory back early.
Mm.
But he just didn't perform CPR. He was cleaning up the room.
Thank you. That's what I was going to say, too. I was going to point that out, that what he was doing instead. But I just wanted to really stop right there on this note right here and say, if you listen to what Jerome is saying, it's clear that even Jerome knows how to do CPR. So Jerome, not even being a physician, would have known.
Jerome has no medical background, though.
Right, with no medical background, you know you're supposed to breathe air into the man's lungs and, pump on his chest. So even somebody who doesn't, do compressions. If you even somebody who may not even be If you have taken CPR ever in your life, you know, ever mm-hmm. in your life, you know to say, Annie, Annie, are you okay? Shaking Annie, that's the dummy. Annie's the dummy.
Yeah,
Annie, Annie, are you okay when you find the
yeah.
dummy? And then you shake her and you see Annie's not okay.
She's
call 911.
Right.
Yeah. She's unresponsive. Somebody call 911. This is what you're supposed to do. If anybody's listening, this is what you're supposed to do. You yell it out to whomever may be listening so somebody can call 911 while you start CPR. That person calls 911 and prayerfully they will come back over to you and Annie and help you get started. So you start breathing into their lungs and you're doing the chest compressions. And you just, that's something as a medical professional, even if you're rusty, you do not forget. You just
right,
do not
right.
forget it.
And,
because,
and
well,
I want to say as a board member on the Boys and Girls Club, they brought somebody in to say, here's in case a kid has respiratory, here's how to do CPR. They told us that as board members.
Yeah.
I've given CPR a couple of times in my life.
See?
Yeah.
See,
so
and did you ever
you
take
know,
the CPR class?
No, I never took the CPR class, but
you
I've taken enough.
Saying?
Yeah, but I've had enough, you know, I've had enough experience. I've watched the course and all that kind of stuff. I know I should take the course, but I've watched
You'll
the course and I've listened to them. And I've done
well,
it successfully.
Right. So if
yeah.
you've done it, and you have experience at it, you're not going to forget it is the point. So as a doctor, you have a medical degree in fundamental CPR stuff that you can find by watching the old, what's that old TV show, Emergency? Like, you can watch that and find out how to do CPR. Like, so there is no excuse as a doctor not to know CPR.
Well, I personally
think
that he was
negligent.
Not in the room. This is me. I don't believe he was in the room at all. I believe he was on the phone with these girls. And when
exactly.
he found out that the man was in distress, it was already too late. And then instead of going about making sure that he at least tried to get him revived, he was concerned about getting rid of that contraband.
Mm-hmm.
Like
that's
the old
doing.
Drug dealers in the 70s.
That's
I said
so,
all
like
the
you
time.
Said, there was negligence all across the board, and it really adds up to the fact that he probably
painful.
Did not have to die based upon all
no.
the other stuff that happened. Fundamentally, it was an error in judgment, and he could have been revived. People are revived all the time. And
all
just
the time. They, everybody
die,
said that he did not have to die.
Right, just because he didn't attempt to revive him.
It's pathetic.
He didn't
attempt.
And that's why he's sitting in jail right now, Dr. Murray.
That's why
he's
in jail,
he's
Dr. Murray.
Yep.
That's unfortunate.
So, we're coming up on 9 o'clock.
Okay, guys.
Kind of give a last, you know,
2012?
What's coming up? Yeah, 2012. What's coming up for 2012? Well, what kind of message do you want to send out for 2012, either for you or for anybody listening?
Well, I know one thing. Barack Obama is on. Don't think for one second that he's taken for granted his campaign. He gets. I get an email from him every 2 seconds. I'm waiting for him to ring the bell.
Right.
Exactly.
So I'm really excited about the campaign for 2012, and I'm hoping that everybody will, you know, stay excited, be in touch, and learn, you know, be educated as with the issues that we need to be concerned about, and vote for Barack Obama. We need another 4 years. We need another 4 years. We don't need another. We don't need to go back to the Republican way of life. That's my takeaway from 2012. We just don't. We can't afford it.
I heard that. Okay, great. Thank you, Ronnie. Thank you, Ronnie and Jerome. What's encouraging?
You know, I was
going to
say I have nothing. but Ronnie inspired me. So here's my thought about that. President Obama is the smartest president that this country probably has ever seen and probably ever will see. And I think he's a non-factor of the political system of today. If you don't have a good support team, you are not very good. So I say kick everybody out of Congress and make sure you vote all the Republicans who've held up the most legislation in the history of Congress since the 95 Congress, which Newt Gingrich ran. The least amount of legislation has been passed this particular session than any in history. Because of that is why we don't have a jobs bill, why we can't move forward. But all of the progression that's happening is happening because of the laws and the moves that the president made a year prior to this Congress taking place when the Democrats ran. So don't let these changes of the economy doing better, unemployment going down, don't let those changes lead you to sleep or lull you to sleep because of this Congress. They've done nothing. Get them all out in 2012. The focus is Congress, not the president. Keep your eye on it and vote your local congressman out of there if that guy is siding with the Republicans.
All right.
Wow. That's fabulous. Thank you, Jerome.
Oh, anytime.
That is good. That's good stuff. And, okay, so you all covered politics. You all covered the president. I will talk about, I'll just talk about happiness for 2012 and how important it is that we all know what it is that will make us happy and to really change your networks around you if you're not happy with the people that are in your circle, and just surround yourself with people that really inspire and encourage you and who are doing great things for themselves. Because for 2012, I think it's the manifestation of exactly what we're all looking for is at our fingertips. So for everybody listening, happy New Year. Make it what you want it to be, you know. Renew your relationships with the people in your family and in your immediate circle and with your God, and just make it an incredible, incredible, incredible year. The numbers just feel so good. 2012, I wish I knew a little bit more about the number 12, but the number just, it just feels so good. 2012, so I'm excited about it. Aren't you guys, are you all excited about 2012 as well?
Yes, truly.
I'm always excited about today. Live in the moment, people. We're well and getting weller.
Well and getting weller, I like that. I like that. Okay, so this is kind of loud. What I wanted to do it also is just make sure that everybody know, if you hit me up on Facebook, despite all the privacy issues that we talked about earlier on Facebook, if you will listen, hit me up on Facebook on my fan page. You can let me know if you are interested in attending the play Mountaintop with Samuel L. Jackson and Angela Bassett. It is on Broadway and will be there until January 22nd. But you must be a member of the fan club and send me a message in the next 24 hours to let me know that you are interested in attending the play. I have vouchers for it. And if you want to be a winner to see the inspiring and very exciting play Mountaintop with Samuel L. Jackson and Angela Bassett, called, it is considered one of the most incredible plays of
it
the
sure
year.
Is.
Yes. So hit me up there on the fan page on Facebook and definitely listen to I'm Just Saying Live. We will start our first official year as a live television program. You'll be able to watch it from wherever you are in the country on Ustream, IJS TV. Or if you're in Queens, you'll be able to see I'm Just Saying TV live on Channel 34 on Time Warner Cable. We'll have an incredible show this Thursday and every first Thursday of the month throughout 2012, every first Thursday of the month, we will be live on the air. So if you're interested in being a guest, or if you know someone who should be a guest, definitely send me a message at Kathleen@KathleenWilliams.com, and I will get back in touch with you about that. And also, if you have not, if you know any single mothers who need some inspiration, definitely take a send them a copy of Single Mother, the New Father, and that's also available at KathleenWilliams.com. It's also now available as an ebook on Nook and on Kindle. And you can get it at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or on my website at KathleenWilliams.com. That's Single Mother, the New Father. And Volume 2 will be is anticipated in March of this year, 2012. Let's see what else we have into January 12th. We're having the book signing. As you know, the book won the book club contest for Caribbean Fever, FeverEyes.com. So January 12th will be the book signing, and I'll post up more information about that on the website. So looking forward to all kinds of exciting things that are going to be happening this year. Oh, one more thing, too. We're having a homeowners workshop, first-time homeowners or home buyers workshop, on January 21st at Springfield Community Church in Jamaica, Queens, and that's from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., so if you are interested in purchasing a home, that's the place you want to be. And the address is 17204 129th Avenue, and I will be posting information about that too. And I just want to say thank you so much to Ronnie for being here tonight, and thank you to our special guest and friend of the show always, Mr. Jerome Esprit of EspritNet Radio, and you can listen to Jerome here on Block Talk Radio on Thursday night at 11 p.m. And Jerome, tell everybody how they can find you.
They can find me on your show. Find Kathleen, ask Kathleen where Jerome is, and Kathleen will tell you. We're here on Thursdays, 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Hit us up. That's where you can find us.
All right, great. All right, everybody, have a fabulous new year, a great rest of the Sunday evening, January 1st, 2012. This is Kathleen Williams, your host, and you're listening to Ask Kathleen. So we'll catch you next week, and we'll close out on a great song. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.